Mr. Jewett, Reel 13. You were sailing in the North Sea and round the Norwegian area. Yes. What effect had the weather, the climate, on the your conditions on board ship?
Well, as most people know, the North Sea, in fact any sea, can be extremely treacherous. It can be mountainous waves one day and flat calm the next, and that's true. Any sailor will tell you that if you go from the Cape of Good Hope to the Barents Sea, it's the same, the globe the same. Well, when we went into the Lofoten Islands, it was absolutely flat calm. It was the sea was like the proverbial duck pond, and these destroyers all going into there was a really wonderful sight. As I told you, I got the shock of my life when I saw the German ensign on the other ships, and I looked astern and I saw there was one on mine as well. I don't know if they'd have shot us all if they'd taken us prisoner, but anyway, we went into battle under the German ensign, and the weather was beautiful. And one of the funny things about that may not be is interesting, that when the destroyers split up to do their various duties, remember we captured this trawler, and the Eskimo, I think it was the Eskimo, it might have been the Bedouin, another one of the other tribes, we were all camouflaged with white and ice blue, in white and ice blue camouflage. And as a matter of fact, when the Bedouin, I think it was the Bedouin, but I wouldn't be sure of this, it was one of the tribals, it was one of those, was against the white of the cliffs as you go into Vestfjord, because that's the field is called Vestfjord, against it you could hardly discern. It was really wonderful camouflage. You really had to look hard to see, to pick out the line of the ship against the white snowy background of the cliffs, the sort of Norwegian cliffs coastline. Well, the weather was beautiful, the sun was shining, it was an absolutely beautiful day. And one couldn't have. I suppose that's why the gunfire, the Ashanti's gunfire was so accurate, because it was, as I said, the fortunate shot went clean into the radio compartment and sliced off a piece of the backside of the German radio operator, so he couldn't warn anybody that we were there. Having said that, that was exactly the same with when we went into Spitsbergen, but that doesn't mean it's always like that. In fact, it was just good luck, and the sun was shining, and for all it was here December, and the sun was shining. It was beautiful conditions, and we fed on bully beef and biscuits. And I always remember seeing the date that's sort of corned beef, you know, and the hardtack, you know, the sort of ship's biscuits. And I always remember looking at the date, and as I remember, it was 1916. We were eating corned beef out of tins, which had been canned in 19 with the had the date on the tin, 1916. Oh, good grief! So we must have had some stores stored away somewhere or other in the country, because that's what we were eating. That was our food at the time. And from there, we came back to England.
What clothing do you wear in cold and heavy seas?
This is a fact. Remember, I mentioned that destroyers and small ships are very sort of very compared to battleships in there. They haven't got what they call, they're not passer. The passer's the word for very, very wearing uniform all the time. But you wore as warm a clothing as you could possibly wear. Overalls, thick, very, very thick white sea boot stockings. They're extremely thick, but God knows where they came from. And sea boots, they're not rubber sea boots, they're leather sea boots. They're wonderful things. I don't know if I've never seen them since I left the Navy, but they're sort of knee high, and they're very heavy, because it's a joke, standing joke in the Navy, like when you learn to navigate your sea boots, because they're difficult to walk about in. They're great big heavy things, but they're waterproof, they're warm, they're superb. But I think the best things to get rid of if ever you went overboard, though, because they're extremely heavy and thick, made of thick, raw hide leather. Naturally, long john underpants, thick long john underpants, and overalls, and then over the top, You wore always wore a balaclava, because actually the only thing you could see out of was a sort of a slit in your eyes. Later on in the war, when we went to Murmansk later on, I managed to procure a Russian headgear which was made of fur, and it was absolutely fantastic. But that's another story. We'll come to that later. But for the time being, that's what we wore. It didn't look like we weren't in uniform. I mean, we could have been fishermen or anything, you know, because you had to keep warm. And if for all the weather was bright sunshine, it was bitterly cold. Make no mistake about it. You never made the mistake of getting hold of a piece of metal with your bare hands. That was something which was rather stupid. One doesn't do those sort of things. But you've got these thick gloves on, so it didn't matter.
Was it cold enough at this time to have icing on the ship?
Not here, not at this particular time, but that later on in the Barents Sea when we went to Russia, we got icing on the ship, which was, in fact, some ships were lost because of the weight of the ice on the superstructure, on the railings, when the guardrails, which are just narrow pieces of wire, became so fat with ice, like about 6 inches of ice, that they met up. Like the guardrails looked like a wall, more like a wall than that. You couldn't see there were guardrails. They were just like an ice wall. But in actual fact, that was how thick they were.
One or two things that I've forgotten and should have asked you really. When you were at sea, particularly when you were at sea, were there many misdemeanors and punishments that were used out on the ship?
Not a lot. At sea, you didn't. You didn't get a lot. I don't know for... I can't speak for other ships, but I was on four ships altogether in the war, and I never... You had your skates, scruffy sailors and lazy sailors and people like that. But when it came to disciplinary offences, you didn't get much of it, such as insubordinate against officers, because... We thought, on the Ashanti, the ship's company was a very, very happy ship's company. We thought a great deal of our officers. We had fine, very fine officers. We had Captain Horsley Onslow, as I said, who won four DSOs. That was DSO and three bars. And I think probably one of the most decorated men in the war. And we had Bailey, who was Lieutenant Bailey, who was our first lieutenant, and Lord and Terry Lewin, who was our gunnery officer. A wonderful man who I played rugby with when we were in shore, and Terry Lewin was an absolute star. And on the other end, I was often on the other end of a phone, and we used to play battleships together. You know, I don't know if you've heard this game, battleships, but I think they made it a civilian game after the war. But we used to play battleships together in the hours when we were on watch.
Were there any other officers that you recall on the Ashanti that particularly were outstanding?
Yeah, not as outstanding as those three, because they were the most I had to do with. But the sawboats. I can't remember the name of the surgeon lieutenant. He was a surgeon, Rocky Navy. He wasn't full time Navy. He was Rocky Navy. You know, they're sort of got rocky gold rings. He was a character, and I remember him because he always used to put. Dig in when it was ammunitioning ship. I'm quite astonished because officers don't normally, they keep out of it, you know, they don't do any man handling, but he was a great character, was he? Well, he was actually. And but most of the on the Ashanti, I've got a long way to go, but on the Ashanti, just after this time, now it's very difficult, it came just a little later when my favourite of all time was my Strander. I don't think I ever mentioned my Strander. Well, my Strander was a lieutenant commander, and since the war, I've tried to find out whatever happened to him, because he was, I think, did I not mention when he dived in from the quarterdeck?
We did mention that, because
he was well, not only mine, but he used to come forward. I think he was an absolute headache for the wardroom, because he was a 2.5 ring, and he used to come forward to the lads, and he had this wonderful Norwegian English, extremely lovable man. He used to come down and play cards with the lads. Well, of course, officers don't do that sort of thing in the Royal Navy. It's absolutely true. It's thems and us's, you know. But and I always remember, as I said to you, when it was icy cold weather in Seydisfjord in Iceland, and it was bitterly cold. He dived off and shouted, started swimming. I said, come on in, the water's lovely. Everybody was amazed. He was a real tough guy. I understand that he may well have been shot because he was landed as a spy. You know, he was probably in the SOE, you know this SOE is a Special Operations Executive. And I rather understand he may well have been shot but he was an absolute favourite. He was wherever he was. He was a very fine man, and I met Norwegians after the war. In fact, when I was a policeman, my wife and I entertained the Inspector General of the Norwegian Force at my house, and Evin Bizeth. And Evin was a wonderful man, and I've got a lot of time because of that. I've got an enormous amount of time for the Norwegian people.
About your own comrades, who were your closest friends on board ship?
I think at that time was a lad called George Douglas. He came from a place called Newton Willows, but I didn't have any one particular friend. Boys are like that. I mean, that regular says you have what they call a run ashore oppo, but not a regular. I mean, you might go ashore with George Douglas tonight. And George has got some letters to write the following night or something, and you'll go ashore with Dave Camps or somebody else in the Navy, or Gambrel or one of the other lads. The mess is very, very close, actually, but very cruel. One time I was a little bit sort of, you know, we had a lad on in the mess. He wasn't a boy. They called Sam Small, and he used to get the nickname of Slippery, Slimy Sam Small. And he was wonderful at building models, and he did this beautiful model of the Ashanti. It was really, it took him about 4 or 5 months with matchsticks and all sorts of things we used to do. And it was a really wonderful model. He used to keep it. Well, one day some of them had a drink in the mess. And there was another character called Woody Britt. And Woody Britt had in fact made a cannon out of a cartridge case with two wheels on it. So these characters wanted to know if this cannon would work. So what they did, they got a small prodigy and got the gunpowder out of it and put the cordite out of this prodigy, put it into the and then they said, well, they haven't got a target. I wasn't there, actually. I was told about this because I might have sort of objected. And they said, "Well, we'll try it on Sam's." And Sam wasn't there, obviously, on Sam's boat. So they got Sam's boat on the end of the table, and they got this model cannon at the other end of the table. Then they fired the cannon, blew the poor Sam's. Did a lot of damage to Sam's model. I think he repaired it all right, but it wasn't very nice. But these are the sort of things. You asked me earlier if people got uptight. Well, as a boy, they didn't. But getting on later on in the service, into the Ashanti after about a year, I think there was a little bit of nervousness. One lad we had, he's called Jeffries, that's right. His name was called Jeffries. And he had been a boy, and I was one night in my hammock, and I saw Jeffries going around picking up bits and pieces off the floor. And I thought, what's the matter with you? And he says, this place is untidy. And it hadn't occurred to me that actually poor Jeffries had gone off his rocker. He was sent off the ship, but he had, you know, I think somebody had noticed it. But we didn't, the boys, nobody would shop anybody. But I think one of the POs or something, somebody had noticed it, or perhaps it was in his work and in his action stations or something like that. But he had genuinely gone off his rocker, you know, it got to him. Because, you know, in a war, it isn't always the actions, though the actions, although Russian convoys, which we've come to, lasted weeks, and it is terrible stress. I mean, stress today, I mean, for heaven's sake, I suppose I'd be suing the government for about £500,000 now, so would half of us, for stress, because we had weeks on, well, I had 3.5 years going backwards and forwards on Russian convoys, and the stress, it's that sort of unnoticed sort of stress that you don't notice it. It's there. In fact, it's so noticeable that when peace broke out, I was completely lost without this feeling of there's a war on, and I was prepared to fight and to die, but it is stress. And when the peace broke out, when I was in America later on, which we'll talk to you, and the peace brigade, I was absolutely shattered. I was naked. I realised something had been taken away from me. I'd been trained as a fighter and a warrior, and expected it. And when that was taken away, I was quite concerned about my future. But I'm digressing terribly, and I'd better keep on the rails, haven't we?
It must have been quite essential to get on well with people on board a ship where you're so compact and tightly packed.
When this happens, there's something I've found, which is, no matter who you are, and how tough you are, and how strong your moral fibre is, you need your comrades on a ship. It's one of those things you cannot afford the luxury of being a loner or whatever, because it's a team effort. The whole ship's company has got to work and function as a complete unit, a wonderful unit, and it does. And the most unlikely of characters gel. It's quite you know, you get people who've had public school backing and really upper middle class people who are called up into the service, meet up with miners and whatever, you know, and sort of the lower orders, and gel magnificently. But it comes down to the fact that we're all human beings, and when you're facing death, you ain't going to worry about whether your fellow went to Oxford or Cambridge or whatever, or if he's Roman Catholic or if he's Christian or Baptist or whatever. You just don't care. And as the war went on, that became more and more prevalent, actually. In fact, sailors are so comical. In barracks, when they used to fall out the special church parties, that meant the Roman Catholics. You'd be astonished the number of Church of England who suddenly decided that they were Roman Catholics to avoid the church parade.
Who was responsible for discipline on the ship? Who was actually involved in it?
The discipline. Well, on a cruiser, on a big ship, on the cruisers that I was on, it was always the master at arms. But in a destroyer, it's the coxswain of the ship. He's usually a chief petty officer or an acting chief petty officer. And he brought my name to his name was Shinkins, actually. Shinks. I remember Shinkins was on the Ashanti. He was the coxswain. Sort of youngish sort of a chap. And then we had the one with the beard, I can't remember his name, a great big strapping fella. He was a coxswain on the Ashanti, a big bass voice. And he was the man who was responsible for discipline on the ship, if there was anybody who did anything. But I think I told you, or did I tell you, about the rum rat? Did I tell you about the rum? About the rum?
Yes,
or did
we talked about the rum and how it was issued. And
yes, and how they
took it out.
They used to catch it when it was poured away.
Yes, yes.
Used to catch it in the mess van alongside. The Ashanti was one hell of a ship, I tell you. But we've come from Spitsbergen, and it was a very quiet affair. It wasn't a big battle at all. Big name. It made the papers, and I think it was good for morale in this country that we'd had a successful raid of Spitsbergen. But those of us who were there.
Do you recall much of it, actually?
All I could remember was sailing up there and seeing the damn place from a range of about, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 yards, you know. But what I do recall was we took some commandos. It was the first time I'd ever come in contact with the commandos. By God, they were the originals. They were the cutthroats of Glasgow. And God, now they were hard cases. They were absolutely looking forward to cutting somebody's throat. I thought, my God, Father, these are characters. These were. And the other time I came close quarters with somebody other than Royal Navy was when we took prisoners. Did I tell you we took prisoners off the trawler?
You mentioned taking prisoners.
Yes, we did.
What are your memories of them? What condition were they in? And how
they were in good condition altogether, as I say, on that destroyer. They were about to sit down to a whacking great meal. And as soon as our boarding party got aboard the trawler and they saw this food, this lovely hot Christmas dinner laid out, guess what they did? They did what any other person would do, sat down and tucked in. And there was panic stations aboard the Ashanti because they thought they were taking a prisoner and all the German lads were going bananas.
What was the attitude of the prisoners when you got them on board?
But actually, it was almost, you might say, pro-British. It was an uncanny atmosphere. There was no animosity at all. And some that we gave them a chess set, and they were we had to guard them obviously, and I don't think they wanted to escape. There was one Nazi aboard the ship, and I didn't have anything to do with him. He was down at he was kept in a special place apart from the others. But the sailors, there were about a dozen, I suppose, German sailors, and some. I was talking to one of them, and he spoke very good English. And I said, "Where do you come from?" You know, and they were all right. There was no sort of that was it. Their war was over, and they knew it. You know, and they were then transferred from us onto a cruiser. There was a cruiser. I can't remember the name of the blessed thing. All the prisoners we took were taken from the Ashanti and taken on the prison. Their war was over. They went back to UK, and they were prisoners of war. You see, but there were. What the Geordies would call fast fingers and canny lads. They just had a job to do, the same as us, you know, and it wasn't a question of anything else, because they were just going to sit down to their... They had a Christmas tree at the masthead, and they were just going to sit down to their Christmas dinner, you know, and a bit of a rough dinner thought to do for them, really, I suppose.
What did you do on board ship when you had your duties were over and you had some time to yourself? What was the leisure activities?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I learned to play chess on the Ashanti, and I became a very good player. So, because I had some good players to teach me, you know, there was a lot of sailors. You find a lot of sailors very good chess players, and I played a lot of chess. I wrote home. You've got to keep yourself clean, and you look after your own affairs. You do a lot of writing. I mean, some of us wrote to as many as three or four girlfriends, you know. We all wrote the same sort of thing to say, with a load of old toffee, you know. It was the general idea was to get letters back, so that, you know, when the mail came, you know, this one's from Ada, this one's from Marjorie, this one's from Joan. Typical sailors, you know. And you're writing, tell them all how much you love them and all that. And this was sort of the sort of general. There was the general. They were all alike that way, except for married men, of course. One tragedy later on the Ashanti, which was a tragedy, was that what is known as CDA, Court Disease Ashore. Well, that means venereal disease, you know. Well, what happened was, because we were all well and truly briefed about this, so none of us. Sort of old hands, old in inverted commas, you know, old hands would fall for anything like that. But one chap later on in the commission was sent off with CDA, and he caught it from his wife when he came on leave. I said that, and I thought that was pretty nasty. That was pretty rough. You know, we'd been away from home. He went home with his wife, came back, and because I know that because he was. He was going around asking us, and he asked me, actually. He asked me, he said, do you know anything about, asking what it's like? You know, I said, do you know? And we thought there was something wrong, like, you know, I said, well, it must have caught a dose or something like that, you see. And, there's things coming. And we said, well, you better get yourself down to the quack, you know. And he did. That was one of the tragedies. You see that sort of thing, where a man had come home.
Was VD rife amongst sailors?
No, was it hell? They're all too crafty. They used to issue what the Navy used to call blobs. I don't know, we've got those, they were condoms actually, and they used to be issued, and they didn't fall for that. But of course, that came. We've jumped the gun a bit. I can tell you more about that, because there was nowhere in the home fleet. You had Scapa Flow in Orkneys, and then you went to the convoy mustering, and we went for our first. After this, we went for our first Russian convoy.
And but that we'll come to that day.
Well, that was when the real, when it got really nasty.
Going into your first action at Lufferton Highlands, and guns, of course, firing in anger rather than practice, what are the feelings that you personally have?
My feelings, first of all, was that it was sort of negative, really. It wasn't positive. When you're going into act, I think I told you, in the a sailor is allowed so many uncensored letters home. They're in brown envelope, and you're on your honour not to betray your ship. It's just for personal things. And most of us, when you get to know that you're going to something pretty, you're going into action, you know, really, I mean, whatever it may be. And we knew that the Falkland Islands, where we were going, was at the back door of the Germans were there, you know. Most of us wrote home and said, you know, will you give my bike to my brother Cliff, sort of thing, and will you give my boxing gloves to Tom, and all your personal things which you have at home, because I was a young son, I was at home. And you write this kind of letter home, and I expect men who are married would do much the same with their wife. But my personal feelings was not a fear, it was anticipation more than anything else. We didn't know what was going to happen, but it wasn't fear. But whatever it was, we were all highly trained and had great confidence. The Ashanti Ships Company was wonderful. I mean, we would have taken on the Tirpitz, you know, mad as hatters, but we would have done, because and it's always a question that it can never happen to you. You think that you're protected by this magical thing that it can happen to everybody else, but nothing can ever happen to you. It's just fact, and it's not fear, but it is anticipation and trepidation that you have, and that lasts for some days sometimes. You know that you're, especially if you're closed up at action stations and you're checking things, whatever your action stations may be, you're making sure you've got everything in apple pie order, especially on the guns that happens.
At the end of the action, all that shuts off.
No, it doesn't.
What was the reaction when it was all over?
Well, that's the fact. I could talk about this because it wasn't a particularly bad action, a sort of thing, as it were, as we came to later on. Although we had I experienced a similar experience. You become battle hardened. I think that's what I'm looking for. You become battle hardened, and you're ready. All the time, all your time at sea, you're in danger. You could be torpedoed, you could be anything. All the time, there's no off duty. Once you go out of Scapa Flow, there is no. You're expected. You have an area of expectancy because the ship is always at readiness, and the Ashanti was particularly alert ship. She was not the sort of ship that the Germans would want to tangle with. A submarine commander would want to keep away, although they did, according to my book, U-333, I think it's called. The Ashanti was in the sights a few times, but later on I'll explain how we were torpedoed almost.